Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:15 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 16th and 10-year yields continue to march higher. We had a move higher that pretty much obviated the small decline that we had yesterday in the yield, and this is still a clear and consistent trend higher. And I think I'm still very much wedded to the idea that if someone is short, they don't really have an incentive to close out the shorts. In fact, they're much more inclined to increase the short positions in order to put and to heap pressure on the Federal Reserve so that they will eventually cave and begin to add in real support to yields. And I think until that happens, we're going to continue to see yields marching higher. So that took a little bit of a toll today on the Nasdaq. So the Nasdaq had been in positive territory all the way through to the last hour of trading, and then it gave it up. And it was still in mildly positive territory, but there's a bit of a tail on the candle. We've had a bit of a bounce from the region of the trend mean. That was to be expected. But now the big question is, how much further are we going to see prices go? And we may see some additional pause and consolidation. I don't think, though, that the Federal Reserve is going to be especially worried about the stock market unless we see it starting to pull back below the region of the trend mean. When we then think about the S&P 500, it pushed onto a new all-time high. And again, why on earth would the Federal Reserve intervene to support the economy or to make additional liquidity available when the stock market is only today making new all-time highs? Now, we've had a pretty impressive advance. There have been 6 consecutive days on the upside, and we may be in for some pause and consolidation in here over the next few days. But again, I don't think investors are going to be especially spooked unless we see a move back below the lows put in 2 weeks ago, and the VIX index is down to 20. And 20 has been a bit of a floor over the course of the last year. So that would suggest that there is some room for trading around these levels with the volatility index for the S&P 500 back at its lows. But then when we think about the vol for the Nasdaq, well, then it's starting to push back up again. And of course, some of the largest companies in the world are listed and have large weightings on the Nasdaq. But there is then, of course, the added complication of what's going on with the advertising business, because advertising now represents a significant proportion of earnings for a large number of the largest companies. Google has been largely range-bound now for 2 months, but it's still in a reasonably consistent uptrend overall, despite the fact that it still has this somewhat overextended condition relative to the trend mean. Apple continues to firm from the region of the trend mean. Now, Apple was also, and of course it's the largest company in the world, was off its highs in here today, and that did have a knock-on effect for the Nasdaq. But Google's really the ending of what has been a very long-running program of cookies being able to track activity across websites. That has essentially taken control of information about the activity of people on your website away from the website holders and concentrated it in the hands of Google. So Google will still be able to track activity across all of its apps, whether that is going to be the web browser or its email accounts or its classrooms or web docs, anything like that, and all of course the browsing activity that takes place on its search engine. But XYZ company, which had been relying on cookies, will no longer be able to do that. So this is concentrating control in these companies that have unique access to a large pool of data from their customers. So Apple is another one of those companies. It's got a massive user installed base of phones and computers. So it knows exactly what people are using those for. And it's rather timely that Disney had moved into the streaming business last year. So Disney now has 100 million active users on Disney Plus. And then, of course, it also has ESPN Plus and Hulu as well. So they have what is often referred to as a walled garden in terms of the data that they're accumulating. And of course, they can then create targeting in the form of ads that they can sell to other companies. So that's a ready market. One thing that we can also look at is Etsy. They took the rather welcome decision from the perspective of sellers on their platform that they would do the advertising for them. You can simply give Etsy a commission on any sales you make and they'll do the marketing for you. And that translated into a lot more sales for Etsy and a lot of happy sellers as well. So the share has been one of the better performers during 2020 because they were able to capitalize on the at-home spending trend, and now we're seeing a process of consolidation. It would appear, though, that advertising is a bit of a missed opportunity for companies like Shopify. They also have a large installed base of sellers and people with websites that have used their services, but they leave the advertising to third-party vendors. And if they were to integrate advertising for their user base, well, then they would have an additional revenue stream that might help to justify the rather extravagant valuation. With an estimated PE of nearly 300, they do certainly need to be firing on all cylinders. And higher interest rates are obviously something that are going to take a toll. This is also starting to take a toll on the solar sector. We had the bounce from the region of the trend mean. Now the question is, will we see an additional bounce from here? The, I think, unique challenge for a lot of these companies is that their entire business model, and regardless of what the sector might be, whether it's the electric car companies or the solar companies or the companies like Shopify that create the ability to make your own website in less than an hour, they're all very much tied to the ability to raise money and to do so at a very accommodative price. So if we think of, for example, at one of these new EV startups like Lordstown, it has a market cap of $2.5 billion, and then the cash and cash equivalents are really quite low. So they anticipate losing $245 million in here this year. So obviously they're going to have an ongoing financing requirement. And that means that they're going to be very heavily dependent on access to cheap liquidity. Then we think about Fisker. It's in a very similar condition, although they did come through the whole IPO and SPAC process in better form, so they've got almost $1 billion, but they also anticipate losing about $450 million in this year alone. So they're going to have to start either selling cars at a really aggressive pace and make money on doing that, or they're going to have access to abundant cheap liquidity for the foreseeable future. And that does represent a challenge when you have higher interest rates. Then we had, for example, in here today, Volkswagen being among the best performing shares in Europe. And it was up nearly 10% at the close. The regular share tends to be a lot more volatile than the preferred shares. So there was a period back in during the credit crisis where Volkswagen was the most highly valued share in the world because of the short squeeze that had been initiated by Porsche. And it popped on the upside in here today as well because Volkswagen is getting serious about competing in the EV world. Now, obviously, there has been an argument against some of these auto companies because they have got this large stock of legacy infrastructure that could be worthless as we move towards or away from internal combustion engines and more towards electric vehicles. But the important point is that they anticipate having free cash flow of $4 billion in 2021. they have outsized revenues to back that up. So at least they can afford to do it. They might yet have to go to the market and ask for more money, but at least it's based upon an actual balance sheet. And a lot of these upstart companies just don't have one, and their valuation is assuming that they will be the last one standing. It's inevitable that a large number of these upstart companies will eventually go bust, and it's really only a question of interest rates. If interest rates start to come back down again, well, then it will extend the life of a lot of these highly speculative ventures. If interest rates continue to rise, well, they're going to continue to come under pressure. And that will take a toll on some of the stock market. Obviously, we have also had this clear rotation from growth into value, and that is still a well-defined trend, although growth has picked up over the course of this week. If we start to see that this ratio finds support in the region of the trend mean and continues to trend upwards, that will lend legs to the outlook for the value argument. And of course, what happens in terms of the oil price is an important part of that, because it's been one of the most favored sectors from the perspective of value investors. They look at oil prices that were extremely low and the rather impressive rebound that we've had, going from $20 on Brent up to $70, is a very significant advance. There is plenty of oil that could be brought to market, however, and I think that's one of the biggest arguments against a secular bull market in energy. But of course, then we also have the fact that the energy sector, it has not rebounded in the same fashion as the oil price, and it's looking a little tired here and probably susceptible to some pause of consolidation as it tests the lower side of that rather large overhead trading range. On the other hand, with the really quite impressive potential for infrastructure development, whether that is green motivated or not, there's not a lot of additional copper that can be brought to the market. There's going to have to be a significant infrastructure cycle in order to bring sufficient sources of new supply into the market. So if we're thinking about where is the potential for a new secular bull market, well, it's probably less in oil and more concentrated in the industrial resources. The palladium price today rebounded in very emphatic fashion, and it was up almost $100 on the back in excess of $100 on the back of Norilsk Nickel or one of their mines flooding. So that also helped to spur some interest in the nickel price, but it was not up in as nearly a dynamic manner. But this kind of event is probably something that will ensure that it holds the region of the trend mean at the minimum. Then when we think about the wider market, Angela Merkel has now stepped down in Germany. It's not immediately apparent who is going to take over, but in terms of regional elections, the CDU has not done especially well over the last week, and the Greens do look like they are going to capture power or make a very significant play for power. Well, that pretty much ensures that Europe is going to continue to support the carbon credit market. And carbon credits have surged higher over the course of the last couple of months, and this is a push on to new highs, and it is the entire market only exists because of political will, and the continued advance higher is also 100% dependent on political will. But there's plenty of that political will around. They definitely want to have a higher penalty for carbon emitters, so that's certainly something that's a European priority, and they really do want to have an energy transition. So it is helping to support the potential for new energy sources, and hydrogen is really the only one that has the EROIE of or to really make a viable case. That's the energy that you get out versus the energy you put in. And when you think about everything that goes into manufacturing solar and then maintaining it, and the same thing with wind, the intermittency is obviously a factor that is difficult to overcome. And then, of course, as economies of scale increase, the profitability of these ventures becomes less compelling. And then they are always going to bump up against this, the energy intensity argument. Of course, hydrogen is more energy intense than fossil fuels, and liquefied hydrogen is even more energy intense. So, the ultimate aim of all renewables and this entire argument is really at its base about pioneering a new transition to liquid hydrogen. And that is going to be inordinately expensive. There are massive technological difficulties that need to be overcome, but the invention and the promulgation of a liquid hydrogen economy is where it's really the only viable potential solution that makes sense. Because when we think about solar and wind, and then the need for batteries for storage solutions, and then the constant need for some form of subsidy, whether it is in terms of manufacturing capacity, whether it is for carbon credits, any of these particular arguments, then of course there is the real there is this sneaking suspicion many people have, myself included, that these solar panels and wind turbines do not last as long as they are claimed to. I know that any time I have driven past a wind farm, I've seen that there are always some of the turbines are not working. And that suggests that the power plants are incapable of running at full capacity. So the ultimate aim of all of these innovations in renewable energy is to create a hydrogen economy, because it's the only one where you definitely get more energy out than you put in. But let's just think about it in terms of a secular theme, because it could take at least 20 years to get there. Now, when we then think about what's going on in the UK, well, the FTSE 100 remains a very internationally oriented index, and it continues to march higher here. This has been a really quite orderly consolidation around the 6,500 level, and it continues to look like it will be able to push higher. The FTSE 250 is on the cusp of pushing on the upside, but as we come up to the peak from early 2020, it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we have some consolidation in this area. And then the pound remains really quite steady around this 140 area. The reality here is that it's looking increasingly likely that as yields rise, there will inevitably have to be some form of assistance provided by the Federal Reserve. When that happens, it's likely that the dollar will take an additional leg lower. As yields rise, it raises the specter of positive real interest rates, and there is just no way that central banks are going to allow that to happen. But until we in fact see evidence to really curtail the potential for positive real rates, then that is something that will weigh on gold. So gold remains steady around the $1,700 area. Even if the downtrend is going to remain consistent, it's due a rally of $100 back up to $1,800. But so far, the rebound has been modest, to say the least. And we're at, I think, an interesting juncture, because stock markets are beginning to experience some vertigo at the potential, or at certainly the growth portion of the stock market is beginning to experience vertigo as the bond yields rise. That's as true in Europe and in the USA as it is in China. And the CSI 300 was in positive territory in here today, and we had a broadly positive day right across the Asian region. China is using its sovereign wealth funds to support the stock market, so it is hard to imagine that we're going to see a dynamic move below the trend mean. But they are also removing liquidity, and that is something that could rob the impetus for a significant recovery. So we may be in for a quieter time in terms of the Chinese markets. And then, of course, this is all taking place against the background of the Chinese government moving in to clip the wings of its most successful tech companies. And that was particularly true with telling Alibaba in here today that they are that is not the ticker for Tencent. Sorry, it's 700 rather than 900. But they told Alibaba in here today that they're going to force it to get rid of portions of its business, and that Jack Ma is going to have to give up ownership of the South China Morning Herald. And then we can look at Tencent, where the price has come down rather abruptly over the last few weeks. And part of the reason for that is because they are also going to have some restrictions imposed on WeChat Pay. And WeChat Pay is one of the most ubiquitous payment apps for the entire Chinese diaspora. So, and indeed domestically. So that is an additional headwind for these kinds of companies. It's not the first time that interventions to curtail Tencent's rise have been imposed. The last one was in 2018 when they basically banned computer games for about a year. And these are just additional examples of how difficult it is to invest in China, because there is the additional political dimension. Of course, the challenge is that we can look at China and think, well, golly, there's a lot of politics that one needs to take into account before one makes an investment. But that is equally true in Europe when we think about the rise of the carbon credits market. And it's becoming increasingly obvious that that is going to also play a factor in the USA as well. So we do have additional risk parameters that need to be monitored in terms of politics, and this is probably something that's not just going to go away. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.